Jason Adkins, welcome back to Real Presence Live.
Good to be with you. Good morning.
Tell us the depressing things that are happening in the state of Minnesota.
It's not all depressing.
Okay. Oh, good.
We got to be joyful warriors and bring the gospel into the public arena. We know the Lord is on the throne. This is the Easter season.
Exactly.
Rejoice, he is risen. He is risen indeed. So we can be hopeful about that. We know the Lord is on the throne and the final victory has been won.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to win.
Gotta be faithful. In the interim, we got to be the faithful ones, though.
Exactly.
And so and the challenge at the Capitol is there's always a dynamic where good and evil are in conflict. How do we build a city of God, a civilization of love? And who are those who are opposing that and bringing forth things that do not promote human flourishing? And so there's always that tussle, and there's always that conversation about how we promote human flourishing and the common good. And the good news, assisted suicide legislation did not meet its policy deadline. That doesn't mean it's completely dead for the session, but it's going to be very, very hard for that to pass, and it hasn't received even one hearing in the Senate. So we're feeling very optimistic that...
So tell us, is that the religious exemption part?
No, this is the assisted suicide legalization legislation. Exemption is a separate issue. I'm happy to go into that as well. But the assisted suicide legislation is looking good not to pass this session. So that's from the defense of life and the dignity of the human person. That's a great, great dynamic.
So let me just ask you really quick. So in this session, but that means the next session is what? It's not after the election, is it?
The next session will begin early January of 2025.
So it is. Oh. So things could really change after the election.
Yes. So it's the state house will be up for election. So we could have a new state house majority next year. It could switch from Democrat to Republican, or it could stay Democrat. The Senate and the governor are not up for election. But if legislation doesn't make deadlines, we'll have to wait and be reintroduced next year. So that's a positive development on that front. On the religious exemption question, what's going on with that? So last year, when a new definition of gender identity discrimination was created, what was not created was a corresponding religious exemption from those mandates for religious organizations, fraternal organizations, and faith-based schools. That had always been the case when sexual orientation and gender identity rules were in place, that there was a corresponding religious exemption for those groups. When they created a new definition of gender identity, though, there wasn't a corresponding exemption created. And that creates real problems on a practical level, because in hiring, picking clergy, teachers, admission, membership, it is now discriminatory under state law for folks to hire someone who asserts a gender identity different than their biological sex. So if you refuse to hire someone, if there's an employment termination because of that, if there's refusal of membership or enrollment in a school, any number of those things related to this idea of gender ideology and gender identity, that can be considered discriminatory. And in fact, it's not an abstract issue, because already one faith-based school and one religious organization are facing complaints in our Department of Human Rights. So this has animated the faith community. And despite not having a lot of coverage in the mainstream media, there's almost a media blackout on this. We have one of the largest collaborations of faith-based communities ever in the history of the state, getting together around the idea of restoring the religious exemption.
And that itself is inspiring.
It is. We're talking Catholics and Protestants of all stripes, Jews and Muslims, all coming together around the idea of restoring the religious exemption, because these questions of human sexuality and gender identity, they're not simply side issues or peripheral issues to our faith. They tell us about who we are, who we're made to be. We're made for relationship, our proper relationship with God. They're theological, they're architectural, as the law scholar Helen Alvarez calls them, to our faith. And that's not just something Catholics believe. It's something that evangelical Protestants and Mormons and Muslims and Orthodox Jews all believe, which is why we've all come together asking the state for a religious exemption and restoring what was the law until 2023. So it's really an inspiring movement from that standpoint, that there's still such commonality among the traditional faith communities with regard to who the human person, how the human person is made, and the way in which they're made, male and female, made for each other and made for life. And so what we're doing is trying to restore that exemption in law, and it's been a bit of an uphill slog, but I'm hopeful that with continued conversations with legislative leaders, continued awareness in the public and the faith community's response, that we can get that exemption restored so that we're not facing complaints for discrimination. And we're not talking about in businesses or anything else. We're talking within the four walls of our own institutions. This is a very, very important question.
So what? So is this a House thing? Excuse my ignorance. Is this a House thing or a Senate thing?
It's an everything thing. So okay. It would need to pass both the House and the Senate and then be signed into law by the governor, whether a part of some broader omnibus bill or whether a standalone bill.
And because the governor wouldn't be apt to sign something like that on its own, would he?
Well, he'll have to. And so that's what we're saying is that despite the opposition from his Department of Human Rights, that this is something that we should be able to come together around and say, look, this is not about a license to discriminate. This is about who faith communities can pick as their teachers, who they can pick as their clergy, how they can govern themselves. It's in constitutional law, we call it the ministerial exception or the church autonomy doctrine. So we're hoping that despite what we know is the opposition of many Democrats to this position, we're hoping that common sense and wisdom and the idea of one Minnesota really prevails here, where different people are respected in their differences and in their different values, and we try to live together peaceably. If we can't do that, there's a real challenge for our state ahead. If one group is going to impose its own view of gender and gender ideology and reach down into the churches, what we're talking about is not a separation of church and state, but the intervention of the state into the life of the church to tell the church how it must believe and how it must behave and how it must hire based on this new conception of gender ideology and gender identity. And that's frankly wrong and troubling and something that should alarm all Minnesotans, regardless of their faith background or their viewpoints, because it's a tremendous violation of the First Amendment.
I feel like we all get pretty revved up about this. So what would you say, you know, for our listeners, what can we do to help? Like, sometimes we feel like we can't do anything, but what would you say would help you guys?
Well, we're not just in the business of revving people up. We're in the business of giving people constructive things to do. And the best place to always do that is go to mncatholic.org. Again, mncatholic.org. And under the Take Action button, you can sign a petition and take action and contact your legislators and say that this is really important. So it's one thing for us as lobbyists on behalf of the bishops and the bishops themselves to come to the Capitol. Last week when this was heard, on the floor of the House, there was an urgency declared by the House Republicans trying to get this bill straight to the floor through the committee, bypassing the committee process. Archbishop Hebda was there in support of that urgency motion. But it's going to be up to the people in the pew to stand up and say, we need to talk to our legislators about this and make sure that this happens. Because it's a tremendous act of hostility to the faith community. If this is allowed to stand, and people need to let their legislators know what they think about it and why it's so wrong and why religious liberty should be respected.
And I think the action item is
mncatholic.org.
I think the bishops have been very good about this. Like, speaking to Luther, Bishop Felton has really addressed this to the priests about having to really be vocal about this issue in particular and how it can affect. A lot of people don't know how, and you addressed it already, but don't see how what's happening in the state can truly, literally affect our religious institutions and how my hands could be tied as pastor with our school and with our parish based on this whole gender ideology stuff. And the state is not giving us any type of protection. As a matter of fact, the state does not even put up with religious exemptions in some parts.
Yeah, that's right. And it speaks to the institutional integrity of the faith community. Are we allowed to govern ourselves? Or are we going to be subject to these gender identity non-discrimination mandates that are in deeply conflict with our faith? And it's not a matter of, you know, should we have pastoral care and sensitivity to those who struggle with their gender identity? Absolutely. But if we want them, if we want to be able to minister people, we need to be able to do so consistent with our faith. The faith community does tremendous things for the state of Minnesota in promoting the common good. And it's the same values that call us to serve others are the same set of values and principles that guide how we understand the nature of the human person, the dignity of the human person, and human sexuality. Again, these teachings are not simply peripheral to who we are, but define who we are in our relationship to God. And if we really believe that they're true and that they promote human flourishing, we have to be able to be free to share those beliefs and share them with others and govern our institutions accordingly. And those should be respected, not simply because we're looking for a carve-out or simply a reason to discriminate within our own institutions, but what we're looking to do is provide people with true life and true human flourishing, and that our position is, in fact, not just good and right from the standpoint of faith, but it's also the most rational and reasonable position as well.
Well, and it's constitutional. So it's like, you know, I mean, it's right in our Constitution as well. But anyhow, so Jason, thank you very much. You always get me revved up, even though you said it's not about getting revved up, but I get revved up. So thank you very much, Jason, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, Father. I appreciate it. And again, people can go to mncatholic.org/MHRA and take action. Thanks very much.
All right.